You know, as we get closer to 2012, a lot of people continue to be faced with uncertainty, fear. They're getting bombarded all the time with doom and gloom scenarios that just keep coming. Well, author and social pioneer Barbara Marx Hubbard has her own hopeful vision, and we'll be talking with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Barbara Marx Hubbard, prolific author, visionary, social innovator. She is the co-founder, chairperson of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, recently partnered with the Shift Network as a global ambassador for the Conscious Evolution movement, a shift from evolution by chance towards evolution by choice. Also co-producing a global multimedia event entitled Birth 2012, which will happen on December 22nd of 2012. God, that's a day after the Mayan calendar ends, Barbara.
That's right. It is. You know, it's so interesting. It's true something is sort of having to end. We can't continue to overgrow. We can't continue to overpopulate. We can't continue to pollute. We really can't continue to fight with weapons of mass destruction. So in one way you could say that long Mayan calendar has come to an end, and we're picking December 21st, something is over. And at the same time, it's really true that something is being born. Something's emerging. There's more connectivity. There's more compassion. There's more interesting technology. There's more clean energy. We actually are on the threshold of a breakthrough that is being pushed by the breakdown.
Now, this change, you know, and you're right, so many people are fearing this moment. I've always said that if anything happens, in my opinion, you know, it could be some kind of solar event that's not going to kill anybody and wipe us all out, but that, you know, the Mayans were experts in astronomy, and who knows what that could be. But why do so many people think it's the end? I mean, I can't tell you, Barbara, how many people have stop me. They say the Mayan calendar date, that's when it ends, isn't it? We're done. They really think they're all, it's, you know, it's history for them.
Well, you see, the scholars of the Mayan calendar say the Mayans never said that it's coming to an end. It's a phase change. We've had lots of changes, like you might say the beginning of humanity on this earth. There was a phase change from Neanderthal to Homo sapiens. There's a phase change from our current consciousness and our current way of behaving, and something is coming to an end. And you know, of course, the media likes to exaggerate it, and we've had movies on the doom in 2012, and there's a natural tendency to pick up on crisis. You can see that everywhere. But it's much harder to pick up on innovation, creativity, love, compassion, and vision. And that's really what we're doing in the movement for Birth 2012, is really to try to identify, celebrate, and have a birthday every year to say what new is happening. You know, we have an Earth Day every year, and there's thousands of separate celebrations for our care for the environment. So we could have a birthday celebration. So we're choosing December 22nd, 2012, the day after, because, you know, when the media focuses on fear is the time that people will pay attention. So we're going to be focusing on the drama, excitement, and love, birth of something new and something good. Both are true.
You know, you are enlightening. I mean, I just got done talking to an expert about world affairs for 2 hours, and he's convinced it's over for us one day. It's kind of refreshing that there's still some hope. I guess we have to do it without being, you know, naive about it. But at the same time, there is a strength behind numbers in people when their consciousness starts to kick in, isn't there? And they do start doing and thinking the right things.
Well, just think, if you just take the sweep of human history, like the advent of democracy, even though it certainly is not the perfect form, think of the difference between democracy or a monarchy and absolute power and tyranny, where we see where there is not yet democracy. It's very bad. I think it was Martin Luther King say the arc of history bends slowly, but it bends toward justice. It bends towards morality. It actually bends toward kindness. And if you take a really longer range view of billions of years, you can see that evolution, you know, the rise of life and animal life and human life is actually the rise of consciousness, the rise of greater freedom, the rise of more capacity. And so we're in a phase change, and it could be the end of human civilization. And from my point of view, that's the evolutionary driver. That's the crisis. Because it's true, if we continue to grow in this finite Earth system, we can destroy our environment. This is true. So what are we going to do about that? We have to evolve, or we're going to devolve and even become extinct as our civilization. Maybe that's exactly what's needed for the human race to grow up.
Well, it could be either or, and it's dangerous if they elect to go the other way, isn't it?
It's very dangerous. And I have a simple phrase. You know, I'm a mother of five, and I got a lot of experience in having babies. And here's the simple phrase for our crisis is a birth. It's natural that an intelligent species would overgrow and populate and learn to fight and learn all this technology. We didn't even know we had an environment when I graduated from Bryn Mawr in 1951. I was told that most of the problems had been solved. So I'm 81 years old, George.
What?
Believe it or not.
You don't sound it.
No,
I don't sound it. I actually thought, Barbara, I could work in a carnival and make money guessing people's ages by not looking at them, but merely listening to their voices.
I see.
And I would have been wrong. You would have walked away with a stuffed animal with me, because I would have been wrong.
Well, you know, there's something about having a vision of what's coming and how you could participate in it. I call this vocational arousal. You get, I'm sure you have it, because the way you talk, I can tell in your voice, by the way.
How old do you think I am?
I maybe 50.
A little higher. Won't tell you.
You have a wonderful voice, George. It's welcoming. It's sort of interesting. It's intelligent.
Well, I'm not sure they would have kept me on the show, Barbara,
if my voice was something like this all the time.
Exactly. I can feel it in the way you speak.
Well, you've got to have the energy, and you've got to love what you're doing. And you know, I'm like you. I mean, I'm not naive by any means. I tend to look for the good in human beings first and foremost, even though I'm convinced, as Joel Skousen, our guest before you, that there are some evil people out there. And I'm not going to be, you know, that foolish not to accept that. There's some people out there that don't want to be enlightened and would love to cut our throats at the drop of a hat.
This is very true. And there always have been destructive elements. But it seems to me, if you really look at the situation as a whole, there are more people who have empathy, who have concern for what's happening. Like if we have a tsunami in Japan, how many millions of people were watching that and caring about people they would never know? When we have a terrible crisis in Haiti, how many people were concerned about it, who rushed there, who tried to help? That's radically new. Empathy.
Oh, it sure is. I've got a friend in St. Louis named Johnny Rose. And old Johnny he's probably one of the most enlightened individuals I know. He doesn't have a bad bone in his body. He's got his thumb on top of anything that has to do with consciousness and spirituality. And he's there. And I wish this planet could duplicate him and spread him out all over the place.
Well, you see, when you put somebody on media who has that quality, you are actually spreading them out everywhere. One of the most amazing things to me is actually internet and speaking like this to how many thousands of people. You're spreading each person you speak to out to hundreds of thousands. And it's also non-local.
Barbara, you know, actually, you're talking to millions right now.
Millions.
Did you know that? Well, millions.
I did
this
not
is
know
your,
that.
This is your first time on the program. You are right now, as we're talking, on 545 radio stations. You're on the internet, and you're being beamed by satellite. You're everywhere right now. You're in other countries, by the way. You're getting listened to in England and Korea and Australia and Japan. You're everywhere.
You know, George, I've coined a new word because I've been teaching on Shift Network, and here's the word. Not even everywhere, but every here. Because when I'm teaching on teleseminar internet, I will say, hello, everybody. Tell me where you are. Somebody says, I'm here in Australia. Then I'm here in Great Britain. And then I'm here in New York City. And I said, you know what? We're all here. So I coined this phrase, every here. So when I'm thinking right this moment of all those people listening to you and me talking right now, we're all here. Now, that is a tremendous jump in evolution.
Can the enlightened ones, though, can they win out eventually over those who are not?
Well, I believe so, because the fact that you and I are here, coming up out of Neanderthal and very early Homo sapiens who lived in caves and had to fight the animals one-on-one, that out of all of that struggle should have come an awareness that we need to be connected, that we need to be kinder, that we need to be having clean energy. Do you realize what an enormous mystery it is that we could be here saying this?
I know.
I mean, how did we get from nothing at all, like the Big Bang, from nothing at all to everything that was, is, and is emerging in this moment that we're talking?
Well, tell me about this event that's going to occur the day after December 21st, 2012. What is this?
We're calling it Birth 2012, and it's basically an opportunity for people everywhere to identify, celebrate, and connect what's working. And there's going to be, just as there was in the millennium where we went across the world, we're going to go across the world on a global multimedia show to see the celebrations of what people feel they're creating. We're going to have a planetary address, a state of the planet. We're going to have a children's choir. We're going to have people gathering in communities and having birthday parties to celebrate what's working, what's creative, what they want to express. And I think that we're going to have a big celebration in Phoenix, Arizona. And Stephen Dynan of the Shift Network on birth2012.com, he invited me and all this movement to see if we can join together. Just as an example, we had a call the other day with Neil Donald Walsh and Lynn Twist and Dot Mavert. Now, Lynn Twist is founding something called 4 Years Go, and she wants to get a billion people in 4 years taking a stand for what they're doing that works. Dot Mavert is a National Peace Academy. She wants to get a billion people from September 21st to December 21st, 2012, to sign up for peace. Do you realize we're scaling up? The fact that I'm talking to millions of people in hundreds of cities, all of whom are connected instantaneously, shows what we can do now. Now, we've had a lot. I think the millennium was an example of what it feels like when people get excited. But at that time, they were getting excited just because it was the turn of the century.
Sure, exactly. It was celebration time.
It was celebration time. We had big celebration, like at the lunar landing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
People everywhere felt something at the same time.
I was 19 when that happened, by the way. So
you were 19. I was a little older. But nonetheless, the excitement was global. It wasn't local. That was true at the millennium, all around the world. I think what we're wanting to initiate, and this is something that you're helping right now by having me on this show, is to initiate people saying what they're celebrating that they're creating, and what are the innovations that are actually working at big scale innovations as well as local innovations. And you see, once you start looking for what's creative, of course you find it everywhere. And you well know the media tends to, the news, so-called, tends to be sensitive to crisis.
Sure. They love that. They thrive on it. They want it.
They want it, and of course they communicate it. And if you didn't know and weren't looking for what's innovative, empathetic, and kind, you wouldn't even hardly know by watching the news.
You know, I've been in the news business since I was 19 years old. And mm-hmm. I cannot recall a time when one of my news directors at the time, when I was a cub reporter or a young producer, ever mm-hmm. wanted me to lead a newscast with something jovial and fun. I wanted to, believe me. I mean, growing up in Detroit, rough city, I wanted to. There were many, many nights I wanted to lead mm-hmm. with a fun story because mm-hmm. I was in that kind of a mood. And he, you know, he would look at my rundown and go, George, come on. What about this fire where two people died? Or what about this shooting where four people died? That's news. That's what we lead with. And, you know, we had an old saying back in Detroit, if it bleeds, it leads. And I hated that.
Well, you're right. You're right. And I am saying that's really not the news. The real news is breakthroughs. The real news is what's new. So I call it the new news.
To me, the news was the dog that walked 12 miles and found his way home. Those were the stories that I liked, you know?
So there's the stories of goodness. There's the stories of spiritual breakthroughs. There's the stories of innovations that work. There's the stories of amazing technologies that could, in fact, extend our lifespan. We could explore outer space. We could actually become extraterrestrials ourselves. We could actually build like nature does with nanotechnology. You know what? We're becoming ever more intelligent. And it's really a crisis of birth. It doesn't mean it's going to work.
No.
I believe there's freedom in the system, but the reason we're saying conscious evolution is evolution by choice, not chance.
Well, that's intriguing. If it's
actually
by choice, we do have
trauma.
Free will. Yeah.
And when Lisa called me about this show, she said, "What's your theme, Barbara?" And I said, "How about evolution or extinction?" The drama is the crisis is real.
It's one or the other, isn't it?
And then if the crisis is real, what is the response that's leading toward a vision that we would want to create? What is attracting us? And I feel that's where the news really is, and that's what we're doing, you know, in as many ways as we can.
Hey, by the way, in 1984, did you really want to be vice president?
Well, I wanted to put an idea forward. I wanted to get my name placed in nomination, and I had a really great proposal. It was inspired by Buckminster Fuller, and here's
Hold on for a second, Barbara. We're going to hit this commercial break, and I want to come back and find out a little bit more about that, and see what finally transpired. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Barbara Marx Hubbard as we talk about the conscious evolution right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Barbara Marx Hubbard. Barbara, before we get going into your vice presidential run, you've got quite a fan base out there. Science and science fiction writer Jerry Purnell says hello. And Richard,
I haven't seen him in years.
That's what he said. And Richard C. Hoagland says hello.
Hi there, Jerry and Richard. We did a lot of work together on promoting the space program way back in the 70s. I can remember with Jerry Purnell, he would come to my house in Washington and we would cook things in our toaster and they burned every time because we were talking so much.
That's Jerry. That's dirty. Anyway, 1984, Ronald Reagan ran against Walter Mondale. Reagan, of course, was the incumbent. You wanted to be vice president for which party?
Well, what I did is I ran to be selected as the vice presidential candidate by whoever was nominated on the Democratic Party.
Okay.
It turned out to be Mondale and Geraldine Ferraro. But there was one other woman nominated along with Geraldine. My name was placed in nomination, and that was myself. And I had a really simple and good idea. Basically, I would go to early morning caucuses, like 5:30 a.m. for South Dakota, and I say, I want to run for vice president to create a new function to find out what works in America. I want to have something as sophisticated as our war rooms, which track enemies and how to defeat them. How about having peace rooms that track innovation, creativity, and what's working? And we don't only have to do it in the United States. Let's do it all around the world, and we'd see the new world. And the delegates loved it. And I had a group of 10 people with me. We were all novices. We managed to get into the Democratic National Convention, and it absolutely stunned the Democratic Party that a futurist woman could walk in unknown to them and get over 200 delegates. I think it was just a sign that the exact idea that I ran for, finding out what works, connecting what works, communicating what works, would make the difference as to whether the world works, you see?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Well, that congratulations. That's pretty darn good.
It's really good.
And what did you do? Fade from politics after that?
Well, what I had 90 positive future centers. Everywhere I went, George, centers formed, and what they really wanted to do was connect with each other and work in their communities. So all these centers joined together with me, and I feel that we had the right idea. And I think actually it's going to amount to the evolution of democracy, because you see our democracy stuck at the top in opposition everywhere.
Sure.
What we're looking at is, where is connecting happening? Where are people being creative? That's happening too. And it's like what you said about the interpretation of what's news. It's a very big factor in our interpretation of reality.
It sure is. Now, let's talk about the conscious evolution. What exactly is that?
Well, as we said, it's evolution by choice, not chance. It started for me when the United States dropped the first atomic bombs on Japan.
Okay.
I was 15 years old, and I realized that we were gaining the power to destroy civilization. And so I asked a great question, George. Here it is. What is the meaning of our new power in science and technology that's good? What are positive images of our future equal to this new power? And not only nuclear, but now, you know, biotech, nanotech, robotics,
sure,
and all space. What image and what ideas about the future do we have to guide this power? And my father knew Eisenhower. So in 1952, I was taken to the Oval Office in Washington, D.C., just after he became president. And I said, Mr. President, I have a question for you. Yes, young lady. The question is, what do you think is the meaning of all our new power that's good?
You told him that. You asked
him.
Yeah,
I did.
All right.
And he looked at me. He was startled. He shook his head. And he said, I have no idea. So I got an idea as a young woman. Well, we should find out what works. We should find out what attracts us. And I became a futurist, which at that one of the basic ideas of futurism is that the image of the future you hold will create the reality that you are imagining.
Well, and as a futurist then in what, the 50s?
No, I had a big stretch. I got married and had 5 children.
Oh, we stopped for a little bit. You should have realized your own future.
Well, I got married in 1951 to an artist, and he told me, he gave me the clue. He said, when a culture loses its story of where it's wanting to go, it loses its greatness. And he said, we've lost our story in really in modern civilization, because we've had two world wars, the atomic bomb, and we were on the threshold of an environmental, you know, a problem.
He said that then, because it holds up now.
He said, in 1948, I was a third-year student at Bryn Mawr. I was in Paris. I went and had lunch alone one day in Paris in 1948. It was the time of Jean-Paul Sartre and Camus and existentialism. And I was trying to be an existentialist, George. I was smoking the Gauloise. I had the beret. And I worked at this little restaurant, and I sat down and with my cigarette, and I ordered half bottle of red wine and a beefsteak. And in walked this very handsome American, sat just opposite me, and I asked every young man I met. I said, "Okay." I looked at him. I gave him half my bottle of wine, and I said, "What do you think is the meaning of our new power that's good?" And he said, "I'm an artist, and I'm seeking an image of man commensurate with our power to shape the future." And I thought in my mind at that set, I'm going to marry you. And I did.
That's perfect.
I married him because just look at that question. What is an image of the future equal to our power?
And did he finish the rest of your wine as well?
Yes, he finished the rest of my wine, and he married me. And I became with him, I would say, we married on a quest for the new story of where humanity might be going. Meanwhile, I lost the story and had five wonderful children. But at every, finally, by about the fourth child or fifth child, it was the time of the American space program and the Russian space program.
Yeah.
And I think we got our clue about the new story when we realized that we ourselves were becoming universal. And it was just at the beginning of the discovery, the fact that the universe has been and is now evolving to higher degrees of complexity.
Jump ahead now, Barbara, for a moment. Jump ahead to where I think we have lost our direction.
All right.
And we, as a nation, as people, seem to be fluttering around, not knowing where we're going, what we're doing. You can't pick up a newspaper. You can't listen to a radio show. You can't watch television without hearing something that is going wrong. And I think something's happened to the consciousness of the nation, and something's flipped off. It's strange, but I can feel it. I can feel it with people. We've talked about this on our show. People don't feel right. They're uneasy. They're tense. There's something going on here, and I can't quite put my finger on it yet. But do you feel that?
Yes, and I think there's some truth to it. You see, we have always been able to expand, able to grow, able to have as many babies as we wanted, to drive whatever cars we wanted to drive, to fight whatever wars we wanted to fight. And particularly as Americans, we always thought we could win, whatever it was. And suddenly we're being told, don't grow, don't fight, don't try to win, don't grow in the old way. And so there's a malaise because something is actually coming to an end. But what we don't realize in general is that something is being born in health, in education, in spirituality, in science and technology. And if you look for it, you begin to have a completely different sense of what's happening. Why am I at 81 so filled with life? You know why? Because I am looking in every field for people who are creative.
You don't feel, nor do you act 81, do you?
No, I do not. I feel new. You know the word,
you're
not
like,
older, but
you're Peter Pan.
Well, I don't think so, because he was a boy.
Well, he was a boy, so I guess what? You're Wendy.
No, I didn't mean that that because of being a boy, but he was wanting to always remain boyish, and you could be, or say, girlish. I feel that I am, along with everybody else on this earth, but because I know it, we're at the threshold of something emerging. we're at the threshold, in my language, of becoming a species capable of co-evolving with nature. We're capable of becoming a universal species, you know, to restore the Earth and actually live in the solar system and beyond. Jerry Purnell, Richard Hoagland, who are on the line. I used to, you know, really work very hard on behalf of the space program. I've been very disappointed that we're unable to continue it.
Do we even have a space program anymore?
Well, you know, it's in transition from the sort of NASA-dominated space program to a more entrepreneurial space program, and that's a very hard transition because you can't really earn enough right now in space to make it work. But there are pioneers doing it. But in the 70s, we had a great project, George. It was called Harvest Moon. And I went to Wernher von Braun, and I said, could we rent a Saturn V rocket, the people, and could we go to the moon and bring back lunar materials or moon rock? And we went to Cartier, and they said they would pay $400 million for 400 pounds of moon rock. So actually, we got the permission of Wernher von Braun, of Dr. Thomas Paine, who was at that time had been administrator of NASA, and we actually would have been able to involve the people of the world in being a sponsor of a space program. And then finally, the NASA administrator said, we can't do that because it's not scientific. That's really not the truth.
No.
They didn't want us to do it because we were invading the bureaucracy with the people who were so enthusiastic. Now, Richard Hoagland, if he's on this line, bless his heart.
He's listening to you right now. He's sending me messages.
I can't believe
this. He won't stop.
God, you know what he suggested we do? That we take a little dome, put it on the moon, and see if something would grow. And to have a camera in there so people on Earth could see something growing on the moon.
Hmm.
And that's why we called it Project Harvest Moon.
Ah, perfect.
Isn't that good, Richard?
That would have been cool.
You know what? I was at a big conference about 4 months ago called by someone from NASA and someone from DARPA. And the question was, could we build in 100 years an interstellar spacecraft? What would be the design and how would it work? And you know why I got invited? Because of Project Harvest Moon.
Perfect.
And I was called the first space entrepreneur.
and I'm speaking to her. That's perfect. Now, let me add, did you ever see the movie Contact?
I did.
The one with Jodie Foster. In that movie, the alien came up to her, and this is what he said. And I want to get your take on this, because it's one of my favorite quotes. It said, you're an interesting species, an interesting mix. You're capable of such beautiful dreams and such horrible nightmares. You feel so lost, so cut off, so alone, only you're not. You see, in our searching, the only thing we found that makes the emptiness bearable is each other. And, you know, when I heard that in the movie, I said, that's us. I mean, we have these great dreams. I mean, and we have these horrible nightmares.
You know, George, I think we're a very young species. Now, that sounds odd to say, but whales are millions of years old. Homo sapiens sapiens, the species that knows it knows, the one that has self-reflective consciousness, is about 50,000 years old. Now, in evolutionary terms, that's a blink of the eye.
That is a blink of an eye. Unless we've been around longer and annihilated each other and started over again, which I think is
possible.
You know
what? And we could have had Atlantis. We could have, come from other dimensions or from other outer space and
sure.
come in here. There are people who see that some of the great edifices like the pyramids could not have been built by humans at that time. We might have had already contact with advanced beings. Whatever the truth of that is, current Homo sapiens, that is you and me, George, and the millions of people on this line, including Richard Hoagland and Jerry Purnell, that's so wonderful, we are just barely opening our little cosmic eyes. we're just barely recognizing we're one whole planetary species. We're just barely able to get into space. I think of that as our birth as a universal humanity. We're just barely being able to see ourselves as a planet as a whole. Do you know, probably we're very young in this universe, and probably shared experience of contact will depend on us connecting with each other, not being so afraid, and opening our collective eyes. You know, like we're like a newborn baby.
Sure.
A newborn baby doesn't know it's been born.
No, not at all. And it's so and it's so innocent, isn't it?
It's innocent, and it's a mess too.
I wonder what a newborn baby is even thinking when it finally can open its eyes and start seeing. I wonder what it's going through its little head.
Well, here's a really interesting thought. You know, when a baby is first born, 9 times out of 10, it's panicked because it's very dangerous, and it hasn't yet breathed. It hasn't opened its eyes. Its first thing is a coordinated breath.
Which is a horrible feeling.
It's got to breathe quickly or it turns blue and dies.
Yeah, that's right.
So when it does that coordinate, if it doesn't do it, that's why it gets slapped. I think we're being slapped as a species. Wake up, humanity.
We need more than that, then. We need a whipping.
No, but here's the other lovely thing about the question you asked. When that baby first breathes, what it does, if you're holding it in your arms, it opens its eyes, it looks at its mother, and smiles. Now, that smile is a mystery because it's never seen you before.
It has no basis for that, does it?
What is it smiling about?
Yeah.
And it has to do with a deep instinctual awareness of being held, being loved, and the mother loves that baby no matter what it looks like.
Well, don't you think, though, the little baby might feel that connection after being in the womb for 9 months? Maybe there's some kind of connection there?
I do think so. So here's the analogy. We have been in the womb of Earth. Mother Earth itself is giving birth to you and me and all of us who are now just able to open our little eyes as a species together. And I have a phrase for what could happen. I call it the planetary smile. And you know, if we opened our eyes and found we were not alone, or found that there is something in the universe that is loving us as we're being born as a universal species, that we could have a sense of joy like we did at the lunar landing, like we did when we saw those rockets go off.
We're long overdue for this. You know that?
And so I'll tell you, George, for Birth 2012, I had this vision of being able to be personally in outer space, like they took Stephen Hawking, physicist. I would like to be able to be in outer space and maybe or near Earth orbit, to be able to make a very brief planetary address as a, sort of a signal that humans are being born as a universal species.
That would be dramatic. Barbara, we're going to hit the break and come right back. We're going to take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.